Hare Krishna. So yesterday morning we began discussing this series which is entitled Lessons from the Life of Srila Madhavendra Puri. In our discussion yesterday we were talking about how Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, after taking sannyas, left for Jagannath Puri, and on his way to Jagannath Puri he came to this place called Remuna. And in Remuna, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came and took darshan of the deity of Gopinath, the beautiful deity of Gopinath. And Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu decided to spend the night there waiting for the Mahaprasad of Gopinath, which is renowned in all the three worlds. So yesterday we were talking about this, that Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu had never seen this deity before. He had never been to Remuna before. Yet he knew that this deity was so special. Yet he knew the history behind the deity. He knew about the glory of the prasad of the deity. So how did Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu come to know? Of course, from a divine point of view, we would say he's God. But keeping his God side aside and considering him to be a devotee and a sannyasi, how did he know? So yesterday we were talking about this, that Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Purve Ishwara Puri Kahi Achen Katha. In the past, he had heard from his spiritual master about Remuna, about Gopinath, about the story of Madhavendra Puri, and about the prasad there. And therefore, yesterday morning we were talking about this principle that when we hear, then can we see. If we do not listen, it's not possible for us to see in the proper perspective. Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu had heard, and therefore he could appreciate the deity of Gopinath. And in our talk yesterday, we were also talking about how unless we hear about the glories of devotees, we will take the devotees as ordinary. To our apparent vision, devotees seem to be ordinary. And therefore, when devotees associate with each other, it's not just talking about Krishna. It's not just talking about the previous acharyas. It's not just talking about Srila Prabhupada, which is all what we must do. But it's also talking about the other devotees. Behind the back, generally, there is a tendency to criticize and backstab. But behind the back of the devotee, we should glorify, we should talk, we should discuss the glories. Because while we glorify a devotee behind his back, we are speaking to another devotee and opening his mind up to the glories of a particular devotee. And the next time that devotee sees him, his vision will be different. He will never see that person as ordinary person. Right? And therefore, yesterday we were talking about this principle, that hearing is the process to open our eyes, to see Krishna and to see Vaishnavas. And therefore a community of devotee is where we talk about Krishna Katha and we talk about Bhakta Katha, discussion about the devotees of the Lord. And such a community gives immunity. Right? A community of devotees gives immunity against the material energy. In such a community where discussions about Krishna and discussions about the devotees of Krishna, not just past devotees but contemporary devotees, is given prominence, our vision changes. And that vision helps us serve Vaishnavas better, lest we commit offenses. Yesterday we were talking about Sita Devi having to go through Ashoka Vatika, having to go through Agni Pariksha for her offense to Lakshman. And yesterday we were talking about Lakshman having to be misunderstood by Sita for his offense to Bharat. And if you remember, we discussed yesterday that these personalities are Ladini Shakti and the Lord. There is no question of offense for them. But through their example, they are teaching us a very important cardinal principle. Sita Devi took Lakshman for that point of time ordinary. He's come to exploit me. And Lakshman took for that point of time Bharat as ordinary. He's come to take away Lord Ram's rule now. He's already, Kaikeyi has banished him, and in Chitrakoot now Bharat is also trying to disturb Ram. And there is trouble. As soon as we see as the deity is ordinary and the devotee is ordinary, life is in trouble. Thus, the process of Shravanam, hearing, is absolutely crucial so that we can appreciate the deity, the Lord, and we can appreciate the devotee. So we discussed this first lesson from the story yesterday, that Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu could really appreciate Remuna, Gopinath, Madhavendra Puri, and the prasad that came from Gopinath. Because Purve Ishwara Puri Kahi Achen Katha. In the past, he had heard from a spiritual master, Ishwara Puri, about the subject matter. Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, when he saw Gopinath, he was so ecstatic. As he waited for the Mahaprasad to come, they tasted the Mahaprasad. It was amazing. How many have been to Remuna? Anyone's been to Remuna, that prasad, I mean that sweet rice, no one on the planet can make it that way. It's just absolutely out of the world. And therefore the glories are spoken in Chaitanya Charitamrita. It has to be, you know, not any prasad is spoken in Chaitanya Charitamrita. It's incredible. Lord Chaitanya took that prasad, and after taking that prasad, he started talking to all the devotees who came with him about the glories of the deity and the glories of Shripad Madhavendra Puri, who was his grand spiritual master, his guru's guru. Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu explained how Madhavendra Puri was such an incredible devotee. He was constantly absorbed in Krishna, constantly chanting the names of Krishna. So much absorbed in chanting the name of Krishna that he forgot to eat and sleep. Of course, many times when I chant Hare Krishna, and if I haven't taken prasad the day before, during the chanting time, I think maybe I should go look for some prasad to eat. Madhavendra Puri was chanting beyond eating, beyond sleeping. And one day, while his travels, he came to Vrindavan. When he came to Vrindavan, he came to Govardhan, did Govardhan Parikrama. And after the Govardhan Parikrama, he rested under a tree. Just sat down under a tree to relax, started chanting. And as he was chanting, it was evening, a young little boy came to Madhavendra Puri. He was very charming, very, very beautiful. Just by seeing him, Kaviraj Goswami says, Madhavendra Puri said, my hunger and my thirst have gone simply by seeing you. But why have you come here? He said, I've brought this pot of milk for you. I know that you haven't eaten for days. Madhavendra Puri said, you know I haven't eaten for days? How did you know? He said, look, in my village, no one goes hungry. Some village ladies were passing by all the time and they saw you. You were just chanting, you haven't eaten, you haven't taken any water. So the village ladies realized that you are hungry and they sent this pot of milk for you. Please take this milk. And after having finished it, you can keep the pot. I have to rush to my village to milk the cows. I'll come back and collect the pot. The child left. Madhavendra Puri was so excited, charmed by this boy. He took that pot of milk, drank that pot of milk, washed it and kept it aside, and started chanting. That night, as he decided to rest, he had a dream. And the second lesson from this story is that for a pure devotee of the Lord, dream is not like the dream that we have. There is a difference between a dream and a vision, a dream and a revelation. Usually the dreams that we have are simply the impressions that have gone in our minds. Srila Prabhupada says, someone will see gold and someone will see mountain, and in a dream he will see a golden mountain. You know, a lady got up early in the morning at about 4 o'clock and she woke her husband up and she said, I got a dream. Indian lady. So in India there is a common belief that if you get a dream at 4 in the morning, that comes true. 4 baje ka sapna sach hota hai. You know, they say 4 o'clock in the morning. So she woke the husband. Say, get up. He said, what happened? Said, I had a dream. Say, what was the dream? She said, I saw a beautiful diamond necklace in the dream. She asked the husband, what is the meaning of this dream? Husband said, well, I'll let you know. I have to go to office, get ready. And so he got ready, went to office. In the evening, he came with a beautiful box, packed with gold paper and beautiful satin ribbon, you know, tied in the form of a knot. And he came and gifted it to his wife. Oh, the wife knew what was in there. She was so excited. She opened the ribbon, pulled the paper off and opened the box. And inside the box was a book called The Meaning of Dreams. Because in the morning, she had asked, what is the meaning of this dream? So the husband said, okay, read the book. What is the meaning of dreams? Well, dreams that we have no tangible reality. They're simply some impressions of the mind that come up, you know. Simply some impressions of the mind. Statistics 2 years back, 1.5 years back in England, it says 60% top executives 60% of the top ranking executives here in London had dreams of killing their bosses. This is the dream they had. Because all through the day there's so much going in the mind. What comes in the night? Some impressions of the mind. Srila Prabhupada used to give the analogy, you know, that in a dream someone is, you know, you sleep in the night and you're thirsty, and in the dream you dream of drinking water, 20 liters of water. In the dream you drink 20 liters of water, but when you wake up you're still thirsty. Still thirsty when one wakes up. And when one wakes up, one drinks half a cup of water and the thirst is satisfied. And therefore, dream is an illusion. There's no reality. In that illusion, no matter how much we do, dissatisfied. When we get up, even the little we do satisfies us. Material life is like a dream. No matter how much we have and how much we try to satisfy ourselves with all the assets in our possession, it's like trying to drink so much water in the dream. It doesn't satisfy us. But when we come to Krishna consciousness, even a little bit that we have, it's waking up to reality. It immediately satisfies us. Srila Prabhupada used to give another example, analogy about a dream, of how dream is simply an illusion. In a dream, someone will say that the tiger is chasing him. And when the tiger is chasing him, this man is turning toss. Sometimes you see, you know, of course I've never seen in reality, only in a movie you see, Bollywood movie. You know, someone sleeping is having a dream and moving his head here, there. Suddenly he starts sweating and he just, expressions on it. I've never seen anyone in reality. Probably they do, but we are too fast asleep to see that in reality. You know, tiger chasing in the dream and this man is moving here, his head here, there, sweating, perspiring like anything. And a person comes and sees, my God. And he thinks, maybe a tiger is chasing him in the dream. So how to serve that man? How to help that man? I'll enter into the dream with a stick in my hand. You enter in his dream with a stick in his hand to chase the tiger away, say, get lost? No. Simply wake the person up. Prabhupada said, you simply wake the person up, and as soon as we wake the person up in that reality, that person is fearless. In a dream state, a person is always fearful. And if you go to help a person in a state of fear, in a state of illusion, nothing will work. But when we wake him up to reality, that he is the part and parcel of Krishna, the eternal soul, never disturbed by the power of time, fearless. And thus, when we try to help others, if we try to help others in a state of illusion, we'll create a further illusion. When we wake that person up to reality, then we can actually help and serve that person. And therefore, dream is usually simply an illusion. It is simply the thoughts of the mind that come up, and we just think, oh, all the desires sometimes come up, if only I could. And all those desires, unfulfilled desires, take the shape of a dream. Or frustrations take the shape of a dream. Sometimes people who trouble us take the shape of a dream, and we think, okay, now I've got full opportunity to deal with this person. The dream that a devotee gets is not a dream. Why? Because a devotee never sleeps. It's we who sleep. Sleeping is ignorance. When the mode of ignorance takes over, when we fall asleep in the mode of ignorance, we get dreams. And those dreams are nothing but the manifestations of the states of our mind. But a devotee never falls asleep. Hey, come on. You know, it's kind of funny. We see devotees all the time sleeping, isn't it? Especially, we know when. Chanting and the Bhagavatam class is a good time to catch up with the late nights that we have had in many home programs, isn't it? We're talking of a pure devotee like Arjun. He's called Gudakesh. Gudakesh, Prabhupada explains, because he has conquered sleep. And as he has conquered sleep, Prabhupada explains in the purport, he's also conquered ignorance. We know the story of how Duryodhan had gone to Bhishma and taken the 5 arrows away, which were meant to kill the Pandavas. Duryodhana didn't have faith. Bhishma, this man has split loyalties. He will probably spare the... He won't use this astras, give me. So Duryodhana took them away. Krishna realized, he went to Arjun's camp and Arjun was sleeping. But no mode of ignorance. As he was sleeping, every breath was saying Krishna, Krishna. Inhaling Krishna, exhaling Krishna. What a fantastic pranayam. isn't it? They do all this pranayam, pressure cooker stuff. It's good for health, very good for health, you know. But when Krishna, Arjun is inhaling, exhaling, it's Krishna, 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 Krishna. In his sleep, there is Krishna, Krishna. When we say Krishna, Krishna, we fall asleep. The difference between Arjun and us as devotees. Therefore, such a personality who has conquered sleep, who has conquered ignorance, he gets visions. That dream is not a state of mind. That dream is a reality. That dream works out to be a reality. We may get so many dreams, and that's simply the state of our mind because we are in the mode of ignorance when we sleep. It can't be called a vision, a revelation. For a pure devotee, because he's conquered ignorance and has become Gudakesh, whatever he sees is reality. And that reality comes out to be true. But we have no other word for it. So swapna or dream is a misnomer. So many times we use that word, and even Kaviraj Goswami uses the word swapna, that Madhavendra Puri had a swapna, a dream. But what it really means is he had a vision. He had a revelation. You know, Srila Prabhupada, he had dreams. 3 times, not once. His spiritual master, Shishimad Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasi Thakur, coming to him and telling him, take sannyas. And the first time Srila Prabhupada got this vision, Srila Prabhupada explains, I was horrified. I mean, imagine a grihastha. Business is going on, expanding nicely. The London economy is booming. Things are coming back to normal after a long time. The pound is escalating up in the market, you know. And everything's going fine. And the guru comes in the dream and says, Prabhu, take sannyas. Preach. One wakes up horrified, terrified. Leave my booming business? Guru Maharaj, I want to use it for Krishna only. Why sannyas now? It's all for Krishna seva only. Let me do service in this way. Why should I take sannyas for preaching? Srila Prabhupada explains the state of his mind. When he got this vision of his spiritual master, take sannyas Bhakti Vedanta Prabhu, Abhay Charanarvinda Prabhu, take sannyas. He said, I was terrified. I got up terrified. I saw my wife, my kids, my business was just about to take off nicely. I simply postponed it. He said, I just could not take it. He said, a second time after a couple of months, again my Guru Maharaj came in my dream and said, take sannyas. He said, I still could not reconcile it. When things are all going so well and fine and things are all going in the right direction, why sannyas of all these things? He said, when the third time my Guru Maharaj came in my dream and said, take sannyas, it was at that time I considered, maybe I should consider what my Guru Maharaj is saying. And then he said, my God brother, Bhakti Pragyan Keshav Maharaj confirmed it. I told him this dream. And he said, yes, this is what Krishna wants. This is what Guru wants. So now you take sannyas. Therefore, Srila Prabhupada, he said, when one gets dreams of Guru, only dreams of Guru should be taken seriously, he said. Only when Guru comes in a dream, one should take seriously. No other dream should be taken seriously. Many times, devotees get in this trap of mind and think that I got this dream and this is reality. Probably this is reality. Here is a science of dreams. Chaitanya Charitamrita is a scientific book. Here is a science of dreams. Not to simply take some dreams seriously. Oh, I saw that if I start doing this Mahachandi Yajna, and the start chanting the Mahamrityunjaya Mantra with the Mahamrityunjaya Yantra and the Tantra, then my Krishna consciousness will be settled. No. Srila Prabhupada said only the dreams of the spiritual master should be taken very seriously, and that too only after confirming with Guru or a Vaishnava. Not straight away. Because sometimes one may have a dream and say, Guru Maharaj comes in dream and says, don't chant 16 rounds. And the disciple is very pleased. Extremely pleased, and besides himself in joy, Guru Maharaj came in dream and said, don't chant 16 rounds. Oh, what a wonderful dream. Looking forward to the dream. Prabhupada said, don't take it seriously. Only if you go and confirm with the Guru and ask him, then take it seriously. If the Guru says, yes, this is what I said in the dream, this is what is true for you, then you do it. Otherwise not. His Holiness Mahanidhi Swami Maharaj in Vrindavan, he had a dream of Srila Prabhupada, meeting Srila Prabhupada. But he thought, now Prabhupada is not here, what should I do? So one of his very close friends, who was from the Nimbarka Sampradaya, he had a guru. So he went and told, I got this dream of my spiritual master, fantastic dream, and he's telling me something. What should I do? So this devotee went and spoke to his guru. And he said, this is the dream that my friend, His Holiness Mahanidhi Swami had. Is his dream true, false, what is it? And this guru from the Nimbarka Sampradaya said, in Vrindavan, dreams are a reality. Outside Vrindavan, reality is a dream. You know, you move outside of Vrindavan, apparent reality is a dream. And in Vrindavan, even a dream is a reality. Of course, he confirmed with many of his god brothers later and then came to a conclusion what was the reality of that dream. Not simply just accepting that dream as the be all and the end all. Of course, when we talk of Vrindavan, we don't just talk of a tract of land. In Vrindavan consciousness, even a dream is a reality. And outside of Vrindavan consciousness, material consciousness, even apparent reality is a dream. And therefore, here we find Madhavendra Puri getting a dream. What was the dream? As he relaxed under the tree, after having taken the pot of milk given by that little boy who had come, who had charmed his heart like no one else and like nothing else before, Madhavendra Puri, in his dream, or should we say vision, or should we say a revelation, which would probably be the right term to use for what a pure devotee sees, because he doesn't sleep, because he's conquered ignorance, because he's good Akesh. Madhavendra Puri saw that same boy coming again. That same boy came again, and that same boy took the form of Krishna. He held the hand of Madhavendra Puri and he took Madhavendra Puri in a grove, in a kunja close by, with nice plants and bushes and flowers. And he said to Madhavendra Puri, I have been lying here underneath for such a long time. I was established by the great grandson of Krishna, Vajranabh. My form as Girivaradhari, as Gopal, the holder of the Govardhan Hill. Therefore, if anyone thinks that Srinathji is not a bona fide deity for an ISKCON temple, Srinathji is Krishna, established and installed by Madhavendra Puri. You know? And therefore, if there are any doubts in anyone's mind why there is Srinathji in a temple, you know, here it is. Here is the reference to Srinathji being Gaudiya. Srinathji is not Pushtimargi. Srinathji is Gaudiya. Srinathji became Pushtimargi later. Much later, after Madhavendra Puri, Srinathji was given to Vallabhacharya, and then Vallabhacharya continued the worship of Srinathji. That deity is today in Udaipur, Nathdwar, Rajasthan. How many have been to Srinathji, Nathdwar? Incredible. That's a beautiful deity. Yeah, Shishi Radha Gokulananda Bhagavan ki, yeah, Shishi Sitaram Lakshman Hanumanji ki, Shishi Gaur Nitai ki, yeah. And therefore, the Lord said, I was established by Vajranabh, personally carved by Vajranabh, under the surveillance of Vajranabh and supervision of Vajranabh. I'm lying there. Because of the Mughal invasions, I was put there, under there. My request is, you please go, find me out. Pull me out of the ground. Dig a hole in there and find me. Bring me out. I've been lying there for a long time. And in that dream, the Lord told Madhavendra Puri the verse that we are reading today. Tumar prema vashya kori seva angikar, darshan diya nistariba sakala sansar. Tumar prema vash, prema vash, being completely conquered by your love, I want to now come out of the ground, my dear Madhavendra Puri. I've been lying there. Because I've been conquered by your love, tumar prema vashe, I want to come out for what? Kari seva angikar. I want to now come out of the ground to accept all the services that you want to offer me. But because you want to offer me these services, O Madhavendra Puri, your love is amazing. Your love is benevolent. Why is your love benevolent? Because darshan diya. You love me, you serve me, but I will come out of the ground and give my audience sakala sansar to all the living beings of this world and bless all the living beings of this world with my darshan. Bless all the living beings of this world with an opportunity to serve me. And therefore, the love affair between a devotee and the Lord is a benevolent love affair. The love affair between a person of this world, a man and a woman of this world, is a selfish love affair. What can that love affair do? A man loves a woman, and a woman loves the man. And at best, they can benefit each other. Max. At best, they can benefit the family. That's also many times a question mark. But at best, they can do that. Right. But the love affair between a devotee and the Lord is not a selfish love affair. It is a selfless love affair, a benevolent love affair, which is nistariba sakala samsar. It has that love affair benefits the world. That love affair benefits every living being of the world. If Madhavendra Puri wouldn't have loved Krishna the way he did, Srinath ji wouldn't have come. And Srinath ji wouldn't be there to give his audience to the world. And thus, this third lesson we learn from the story is the difference between a selfish love affair and a benevolent love affair. And I want to focus on this point a little bit this morning. It's a very beautiful point, you know. The love affair between the people of this world, sometimes it doesn't benefit each other also, what to speak of anyone else. Not even each other. One prince, when he was a child, he was cursed. What was the curse? The curse was, he could only speak two words in a year. Rest of the time he would have to keep quiet. And when he would, if he would speak more than these two words, he would die. That was the curse upon him. My God, and in those days curses would work. Nowadays even if we curse, my God, God knows if it works or not. So this prince, as he was growing, he happened to see a beautiful princess. And he just started liking her like anything. So the first year when he saw her, he wanted to say, I like you. But it was three words. So he couldn't say those three words. So he waited for two full years. And she also liked him actually. Waited for 1 year, maybe 2 years to speak four words. Well, by the time he reached there, he said, if I only say I like you, it won't be very good. So he thought, I must say I like you. Will you marry me? So will you marry me? Four words. Became a total of seven. And if you say, princess, I like you, will you marry me? It became eight words. So he waited for 4 years. Just couldn't say it. For four full years, this man waited. And after 4 years, finally the day came when he could now speak eight words. So he came to the princess and he said, princess, I like you. Will you marry me? And the princess replied, pardon me? Because the princess was deaf, hard of hearing. My God, 4 more years to wait to be able to say the same thing to the princess again. But yes, the love affairs between this world can't even benefit each other many times. And even if it does materialize and marriage does happen, my God, sometimes it ends up in a Kurukshetra battle instead of beautiful Vrindavan, isn't it? Someone was married for a long time, so a guy came and said, what is the secret of your long marriage? You've been married for the last 20 years. What is the secret of your long marriage? So the secret of our long marriage is, me and my wife go out twice a week. What do you do when you go out a week? Twice a week? We take dinner, candlelight dinner, we sing, we dance. She goes out on Fridays, I go out on Saturdays. The secret of our long-standing marriage. My God, Sometimes they say, before the wedding, the lady respects the man. After the wedding, the lady suspects the man. And after he leaves the body, then he again starts respecting the man. You know, it's very hard sometimes in the world. Just to make it all go together, it's very hard. And when things all go well, Krishna conscious family life, the husband, the wife understand each other, they try to serve Krishna together, then they're trying to benefit, serve. But even in that benefit, how much will that benefit spread? How long will that, how much will that love affair really benefit people? You know? And therefore, it is said that in India, Shah Jahan, the Mughal emperor, he was in love with this lady Mumtaz Mahal, and he wanted to marry Mumtaz. And in order to marry Mumtaz, she was fourth amongst his seven queens. And in order to marry her, he had to first kill her husband. She was already married. Shah Jahan killed her husband and then got married to her. Mumtaz, she died at her 14th delivery. After she died, Shah Jahan married his sister. And then after he married the sister, he had relationships with his daughter. And at the end of it all, he wanted to make the Taj Mahal, the monument of love, the monument of his love for his dear wife, Mumtaz Mahal. And when he made that monument, he cut off the hands of all the artisans, of all the sculptors, of all the workers who was responsible to make the Taj Mahal. He cut off all of their hands. Why? Because he didn't want a monument like that again. A monument of love. What a benevolent love affair that a husband has to be killed to marry that lady. Right. And when the lady dies, has to marry the sister. And after marrying the sister, what a monument of love that he exploits the daughter which is born of the same wife, Mumtaz Mahal. And what a benevolent love affair that when you erect the monument of love for the world to see, to benefit the world and get purified by seeing that monument, you cut off the hands of all the artisans, the sculptors, the workers, so that can never be repeated again. What benevolence. What fantastic benevolent and blessing to the world. Isn't it? People go all from the world. If they go to India, they say, Taj Mahal nahi dekha, kya dekha? You went to India, you didn't go to Agra, you didn't see the Taj Mahal. What did you see? A monument of love, a monument of violence. A monument of violence. So many lives were taken and so many hands were cut simply to have it there and not be replicated again. In Hindi they say, I don't know, some of you may understand, some may not. One guy said, Taj Mahal ko dekh ke bola Shah Jahan ka pota. Pota is a grandson. Shahjahan was the one who made Taj Mahal. Taj Mahal ko dekh ke bola Shahjahan ka pota, aaj apna bhi bank balance hota agar dada aashik na hota. You know, if our grandfather Shahjahan was not in this love affair, probably we would have a bank balance today. How much he spent on that monument? Where is it benefiting anyone? The only love affair and only relationship that can benefit others is a devotee couple. And even that devotee couple, only if they serve, preach and try to help others. Otherwise, where is the question? Whereas when we talk about the Lord, look at Madhavendra Puri's love affair with Krishna. Of course, it wasn't the wrong kind of affair that we have known now. Otherwise, we'll say Krishna, Madhavendra Puri, man. Not that kind of stuff. It's a devotional love affair between Krishna and his devotee. And look at the benevolence of that love affair. Darshan diya nistariba sakala sansar tomar prema vashe. Because of your love, I've come to this world to take you, accept your service. Kori seva angikar. But by the way, since I've come, darshan diya nistariba sakala sansar, I want to come and deliver the whole world, all the fallen souls, by giving them my audience. Yesterday was the royal wedding. Everyone was watching the royal wedding. In fact, I wanted to speak about this yesterday. I didn't know that the class was to go till 9 o'clock. So I ended at 8:25 yesterday. You know, yesterday was the royal wedding. And it's nice. I saw it. I saw some part of it on the internet. It was beautiful. Very beautiful. Regal. Cultured. Well-mannered. Well-behaved. I don't know what happens at other times. But nevertheless, yesterday, the whole ceremony seemed so religious. The whole ceremony seemed so spiritual. And going back to India, I now say many times, even Hindu people, when they get married, they play Bollywood tunes and Bollywood songs. And yesterday in the wedding, there was a choir. Beautiful hymns were being sung unto the praise of the Lord. And the Archbishop came and he was talking about some spirituality. He was talking about God, service to God, taking vows in the name of the Holy Father. You know, a very, very sacred event, I felt. It didn't seem like, you know, just some, of course it was regal. Of course there was a lot of money that was spent. But it seemed like a very sacred thing. The whole event seemed to be like a very sacred thing. It seemed like a very serious thing. Coming and taking vows in front of God, that's what a wedding is meant for. You know, taking vows and being very serious about it, being very committed to it, seemed like a very nice thing. And even if it were a very serious committed wedding, how much will it be benevolent to the whole world at large? So this morning, I want to talk about the royal wedding. The royal wedding in Ayodhya. The royal wedding between Sita and Ram. Sita Kalyan. How does that Sita Kalyan benefit the world? How is this love affair between Sita and Ram? How is this love affair between Radha and Krishna? How is this love affair between Lakshmi and Narayan? How is this love affair between Vishnupriya, Lakshmipriya and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu? A benevolent love affair that blesses the whole world. These royal weddings bless the whole world. Yes, yesterday was fantastic and it will do very good to England and the people of England. Hopefully and prayfully. At the same time, this royal wedding is incredible. Incredible. And this morning I would like to focus a little bit on the Sita Kalyan from Valmiki's Ramayana and talk about the wedding of Mother Sita and Lord Sri Ram. It's extremely beautiful. There's two kinds of mathematics. Numerical mathematics and realistic mathematics. And there's a difference between the two. Numerical mathematics only finds some answers. Realistic mathematics serves, does something for the world. If you say, there are 2 drops of water and 2 drops of water. When you put 2 drops of water and 2 drops of water together, what do you get? The numerical mathematics answer would be, you get 4 drops of water. Answer is correct. Technically right. You know what is realistic mathematics? Realistic mathematics doesn't quantify it to be 4. Realistic mathematics sees the quality. It's okay. 2 drops of water and 2 drops of water is a... You get a cup of water. You don't say, see, in my cup, you know, how many drops of water are there? There are 3,566 drops of water in this cup of water. We don't say that. Yes, there are 3,566 drops of water in this and probably it's made out of 1,500 and something else to add it together. But realistic mathematics is, here is the cup of water, the quantity of water in this cup. Let me drink it. Let me use it. Wedding is also like that. When a man and a woman gets married, it's one man and two women. I'm sorry. It came just. It's called slip of tongue. It's a man and a lady. From numerical mathematics, it's 1 plus 1, 2. And it's 2 plus 2, 4. 2 hands and 2 hands, 4 hands. You know? 1 heart and 1 heart, 2 hearts. So numerically, it's 2. Realistically, Srila Prabhupada explained what realistic mathematics is. He said realistic mathematics is, there's one energy, the energy of the man, and there's the energy of the lady, and now there is so much energy to serve. Realistic mathematics will say, one energy, two energy, put together 2 energies. It's not 2 energies. There's the energy pooled together. Now to serve. Ganga, Yamuna, Saraswati, they meet at Prayag. It's not 1 river, 2 river, 3 rivers. When they come together in Sangam, it is a holy confluence for purification. We don't say, look at the Prayag here, look at the confluence, the Sangam. It's 3 rivers put together, 1 plus 1 plus 1 is equal to 3. And on the day of Kumbh Mela, the fourth element comes in, the nectar, Amrit. People go and take a dip there and don't say, see, 1 + 1 + 1 + 1 = 4, Yamuna, Ganga, Jamuna, Saraswati and Amrit. No. They bathe in the confluence for purification. And if this is not the purpose of married life, like Prabhupada said, 1 + 1 is so much energy to serve. Right. If that's not the purpose, then once in our temple in Chopati, one wedding announcement was made. They announced this wedding for blessings. So as this announcement was made, one guy getting married to another lady, devotees, both devotees, one grihastha was sitting right next to the brahmacharis and he said, ding dong bell, another in the well. And it's not even a brahmachari saying this. This grihastha is saying, ding dong bell. We had this nursery rhyme, ding dong bell, pussy in the well. We had that nursery rhyme when we were in kindergarten. This grihastha is sitting next to me and saying, ding dong bell, another in the well. So what are you saying? Huh? They're devotees. They're coming together with the purpose to serve Krishna, serve Guru. You're saying, in the well? Devotee life, married life is not meant to be in the well. Devotee married life and grihastha life is meant to be well and then serve well, not to be in the well. Sitaram Kalyan, it's called Kalyan. Kalyanam means marriage. Sitaram Kalyanam, Sitaram's wedding, is a wedding of benevolence. To do well to the world, to do well to all living beings and living creatures on the planet. Dashrath Maharaj, as one day he's sitting on his throne, Vishwamitra Muni arrives there. Vishwamitra Muni is a Muni known for his anger. Somehow the sages, I don't know why, Durvasa, Vishwamitra, they just get angry at a small little thing. Thank God we are amongst devotees. Because sometimes devotees also lose their temper. But they are losing their temper, it doesn't mean so much. You know, can't do harm to us. Can help us, but can't do too much harm. But Vishwamitra, Durvas losing their temper and cursing, my God, too much. As Vishwamitra comes in, Valmiki Ramayana explains, Dashrath shakes Vishwamitra's hand. So don't think the concept of handshake is new. It's explained that Dasharath and Vishwamitra shake their hands. And the third canto of the Bhagavat, it is explained that Lord Garbhodakshaya Vishnu shakes his hand with Brahma. Shake hand. But that shake hand is a cordial shake hand. Do you know how the modern shake hand came about? In medieval Europe, when two enemies would meet each other, they would be so scared that they're having some weapons in their courts, secret hidden weapons, so they would come and shake the hand, literally. Hold the hand and shake so that the weapons would fall off. Just to test. And therefore the modern concept of shake hand is out of fear. Fear, of course, now no longer, but that's how it came about. Dashrath and Vishwamitra, they shake their hands. And Dashrath asks Vishwamitra a question, and Vishwamitra asks Dashrath a question. And the world is about questions and answers anyways. Only questions and answers going on constantly. But many times, the question and answers are not so meaningful. And at Buckland Hall, I was telling that one time a farmer and a lawyer boarded a flight at London Heathrow to go to Sydney, Australia. And as they settled in their seats, the lawyer, he was thinking, this ordinary farmer, I can take him for a toss, you know, he probably doesn't know much. He said to the farmer, the farmer was just kind of dozing off, he got the farmer, he just woke him up and said, "Hey, let's have a question and answer quiz. I'll ask you a question. If you give the answer right, I'll give you £5. If you ask me a question and I give the answer right, you give me £5, whichever way." He said, "I'm not interested. Let me sleep. I'm anyways tired by my field work." I went to sleep. The lawyer was saying, "No, I can't allow him to sleep. Like, there must be some fun. I want to have some fun." He woke him up. He said, "Look, a better deal. If I ask you a question and you give me the answer right, I'll give you £500. Right. You know? And if you ask me a question, I'm sorry, if you ask me a question and I can't answer the question right, I'll give you £500. If not, £5. He said, "Okay, no problem." So he woke the farmer up. He said, "Okay, first your turn." The lawyer said, "What is the distance between the earth and the moon?" The farmer realized, "I don't know the answer." He just took £5 out. Take it. I don't even answer the question. I didn't get it right? No problem. Take the 5 pounds. Quiz done. I said, now your turn. So the farmer asked the question. The farmer said, what goes up a hill with 3 legs and comes down with 4? And now the lawyer knew, if I don't give answer, I have to pay 500 pounds. Scratched his head like anything. Didn't get the answer. He took his computer out, saw all his data. No answer. He called the stewardess, can you give me the earphone? Tuned into the modem, checked his email, so all did all internet research, didn't find the answer. Finally took 500 pounds out and gave it to the farmer. Said, here is your 500 pounds. The farmer took the 500 pounds, went back to sleep. He said, hey, come on, you're supposed to answer that question of mine. Tell me, what is it that goes up the hill with 3 legs and comes down the hill up with 4? The farmer pulled a 5-pound note and gave it back. Done. 505 pounds. Lost 10 pounds, got 500 pounds, and okay, 500 pounds. The world is full of meaningless questions and answers. When Dashrath and Vishwamitra met, Vishwamitra asked Dashrath a question. Dashrath was a Kshatriya. How is your administration and protection of the citizens going on? And Dashrath knew Vishwamitra was a sage. He asked Vishwamitra this question. How is your pursuit of self-realization going on? Many times people come to sadhus and they ask all kinds of strange questions. You know, all kinds of strange questions. One guy came to one of our brahmacharis at Chowpatti and said, my wife is missing, can you help me? He said, go to the police station. Go to the police station. You're supposed to ask about your missing wife at the police station. Why are you coming and asking in the temple? He said, no, probably if you have this mystic power, you can ask your Lord and give me the answer. He said, we don't have a mystic power. Go, Baba, please go. Go to the police station. And practically every single time they'll come and put their palm straight in front of you. Haath dekhte kya, Maharaj? Haath dekhte? Maharaj, can you see a palm? Read your palm? What will happen? One guy came to Srila Prabhupada and put his palm straight out and said, Swamiji, can you read my palm? And Prabhupada took his palm in his hand. Focused, you know, as if he was really reading his palm in his life. Prabhupada focused. And he said, you will die. Revelation. Based on the Gita, Prabhupada predicted you will die. But you find all of these people coming up to you and asking all kinds of strange questions. When one goes to a spiritual master or a senior devotee or a guru or a sannyasi, a sage, one doesn't go and ask a question, how are you, Maharaj? No, that's a wrong question to ask. When one goes to the spiritual master, one doesn't ask, how are you, Guru Maharaj? When the Navayogendras came to Nimi Maharaj's palace, Nimi came to the Navayogendras and said, how am I? Please tell me, how am I? What is my condition, current condition of spiritual life? I cannot evaluate my condition. You are my guru. You are my mentor. You are a senior experienced Vaishnava. You are a guide. You tell me, how am I? You know, we don't go them and ask, how are you? When one goes to the doctor with cholera or pneumonia and says, how are you, doctor? I said, what are you asking, man? You're asking me, how am I? I'm okay. You go to a doctor not to ask the doctor, how are you? You go to the doctor and ask the doctor, how am I? And then he does all his tests, sends us for all the pathological tests and checks all our parameters in the body and says, you're doing well or we are not doing well. So when one goes to a spiritual master, when one goes to a senior devotee, this is not the question to ask, how are you? The question to ask is, how am I? Vishwamitra Muni, Dashrath Maharaj said, how is your pursuit of spiritual life going on? They were friends, of course, so they could exchange those questions. And of course, he said, everything is going fine. And Dashrath washed his feet, respected him, offered him obeisances and said, what can I offer you? Tell me, please. Vishwamitra said, you sure? Said, yeah, of course, anything. Anything under the sun I'll offer you. He said, anything under the sun? Give me your son. I want Ram. I want to take Ram to kill these demons. Marich, Subahu, who are creating tremendous trouble in our fire sacrifices and yagyas. We want to just finish these demons off and continue our fire sacrifice. Dasharatha said, no, I can't give my son. I can't give my son. He said, what? You are a Kshatriya. You just gave your word, didn't you? You are a gentleman, and a gentleman always keeps his word. You given your word that you will give your son away. Give me your son. Say, my son is just 16 years old. He doesn't even know how to hold the bow yet. What is he going to kill these demons? He's a young, tender child. I can't give him. Take me. I'll come with you. I'll come with you and my entire army shall come with you to kill all the demons. Oh, by the way, whose followers are these demons? Vishwamitra said, Ravan. As soon as Dasharatha heard the name Ravan, he said, even I can't come. What to speak of my son? Even I can't come. I can't deal with that Ravan and his people. What to speak of my son? I can't give him. Vishwamitra Muni got up and said, okay, I'm leaving. You may you be happy with your family. Sometimes people say like that, isn't it? That's not a benediction. That's out of anger. Sometimes amongst two devotees, you'll say, one will say to the other, can you give me this? No. Please, it's needed for my service. No. Okay, you be happy with the stuff that you have now. I'm leaving. That's a curse. That's not something so privileged and happy. Vasishtha Muni realized. Vishwamitra is saying, may you be happy, but is angry. Vasishtha Muni said, give him. His Ram, he'll take care. You don't worry. You give him. Give him away. And Dasharatha Muni gave, Dasharatha Maharaj gave Ram and Lakshman to Vishwamitra. And Vishwamitra Muni took them away. And therefore, before we give a word, we should deliberate. Always deliberate. Initiation is about lifetime commitment. And therefore, when we come to take initiation, it's giving a word to Guru in front of the deities, in front of Srila Prabhupada, in front of the holy fire, and in front of all the Vaishnavas. And therefore, it's not a fashion. Everyone's getting initiated, let me also get initiated. I have a car, he has a car. I have a house, he has a house. I have a job, he has a job. He has a guru, I don't have a guru. I think I should also have a guru. It's not a fashion. It's a sincere commitment. And when we give our word, we cannot turn back on our word. Dasharatha Maharaj gave a word and he was turning back on his word. And Vasishtha Muni told him, you're a gentleman, you're a kshatriya, you can't go back on your words. Srila Prabhupada said this. Srila Prabhupada said this, that if one takes vows of initiation, commits to follow what the spiritual master has said, and he doesn't have the determination to follow, Prabhupada said, then he's less than an animal. If he doesn't even have the determination to follow it. And therefore, it's not that we should rush and hush. Consider, deliberate, and then give our life. And when we give that commitment, it's a lifetime commitment. Initiation is not a one-time affair. It is a day-to-day affair of commitment to the spiritual master's mission, to serve the spiritual master. Arjun got initiated not once. 2.7 is what? Gita, initiation. Shishyasteham shadi mam tuam prapannam. And Krishna accepts him as a disciple. But that's initiation. And what's the Gita? The Gita is every single verse reiterating that initiation, reiterating that commitment, constantly making more and more commitment to serve, clarifying. But you said this, Krishna. I want to understand this. Why? Because I want to surrender more. And therefore, initiation is a matter of commitment. Those vows that we give to the spiritual master are so serious. They are so sacred. And we cannot take them easy and cheaply. Simply because now suddenly we realize that something that I am too attached to will go away. Dasharatha Maharaj realized, I gave a word, but my Ram, something that I am so attached to will go away. Going back on his word, no. Vishwamitra was taking Ram and Lakshman away. Was Vishwamitra so selfish? Simply considering his own benefit, I want to kill Subahu and Maricha and all of these demons and I want to continue my yagya and sacrifice. Was he so selfish? No, he wasn't selfish. You know why Vishwamitra was taking Ram away? He was thinking, Vasishtha has given this child the name Ram, but Ram is incomplete. He is not yet complete. Ram is not benevolent to the world. Ram alone can never be benevolent to the world. Krishna alone can never be benevolent to the world. Because Krishna and Ram are gods. They are gods of law. They function by law. ये यथा माम प्रपद्यन्ते ताम तथैव भजाम्यहम्। यू कम टू मी देन आई विल कम टू यू। दे गो बाय लॉ, दे हार्ट, दे सॉफ्ट हार्ट्स, बट दे हैव टेकन दैट लॉ वेरी सीरियसली। वशिष्ठ हैड गिवन हिम द नेम राम। विश्वामित्र थॉट लेट मी बिकम मित्र। मित्र मीन्स अ फ्रेंड, विश्व मीन्स द वर्ल्ड। They have given me the name Vishwamitra, and previously everyone thought I was a Mitra, not a friend to the world, because I created such a chaos to become a Brahmarishi. So much chaos. One Ramba came, one Menka came. Oh, so much disturbance to the world I created. So the whole world thinks I am Vishwa, a Mitra. Now I want to become Vishwamitra, friend to the world. How will I be a friend to the world? Vashishtha gave the name Ram. I want to add Sita to that name, Ram. I want to make Ram Sita Ram. Right? Previously, it's only been Ram so far. I must bring Sita in his life. I must facilitate the Shaktiman, the energetic, and the Shakti, the energy, Ladini Shakti, coming together. What is that Shakti? Love. God is law. Shakti is love. And when there's a combination of law and love, there is hope. When there is simply law, there is problem. When there is simply love, there is problem. When there is law and love, there is hope. In a family, the father is giving law to the child. And yesterday I was saying this, that one day when father was beating the child, black and blue, slapping him. And as he was slapping someone, why are you beating your child? He said, tomorrow is the result for his exam. So why are you beating him today? He said, tomorrow I'm going out. So I know what the result will be anyways. I just fulfill my what I have to do to him and then go out. That's the law, father's law. Mother is love. Vashishtha gave him the name Ram, God of law. Vishwamitra became greater than Vashishtha. He became Mitra to the world, friend to the world, by facilitating the meeting of Sita and Ram. Facilitating Sitaram Kalyan, having the royal wedding of law and love happen. Because the combination of law and love, the royal wedding of law and love, is a wedding of benevolence to the world. Janak Maharaj started doing the yagya for the wedding. Wedding used to have yagyas then. 12 days of yagya. And then after 12 days of yagya, the bow was brought. Sita Swayamvar. It was called Shiva Chap, the bow of Lord Shiva. How many men had to bring it out? 5,000 men. 5,000 men, they couldn't lift it. The bow was on a trolley and 5,000 men were needed to push the trolley. And why there was a condition that the man who would string the bow would be the husband of Sita? Because Sita, one day in the garden, wanted some flowers from the tree. She was a little girl. And she realized her hand would just reach. So she went into the room of Janak Maharaj and picked up the bow. 5,000 men would push it. So Sita as a little girl picked it up and used the bow to pluck the flowers. So when Janak saw this, he said, my God, who is she? Her husband has to be as powerful or more powerful than her. So he made the condition. Only someone who can string that bow after picking it up can be the husband. And what was the history of the bow? The history of the bow is very interesting. Right. Daksha Prajapati had offended Lord Shiva. We know in the fourth canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam. And because of that offense, Sati was very upset later. We know when Sati went to her father's place, Shiva had tried to stop her. She didn't listen. Finally, being so upset that her husband was insulted, she immolated herself. She burnt herself. Lord Shiva was extremely angry. Very, very angry. He made a bow. And that bow was this particular bow to destroy Daksha. But as he was about to destroy Daksha, that bow was so powerful that an arrow released from that bow wouldn't just destroy Daksha. It would destroy all the demigods around. So all the demigods came and fell at the lotus feet of Lord Shiva and said, you two, please don't do this. Please, don't do this. We will all be destroyed. Shiva is Ashutosh. They prayed. Easily pleased. Lord Shiva said, but what do I do with this bow? What should I do with this bow? That bow came to Parshuram later. And after it came to Parshuram, Parshuram handed it over to Janak Maharaj. And now that bow was there. That bow was full of destructive energy. Destructive energy. That bow was contaminated because it was touched by Lord Shiva, the killer of his father. And it was touched by Parshuram, the killer of his mother. The vibrations in that bow were vibrations of destruction and killing alone. Who is the father of Lord Shiva? Lord Brahma. He had come from his eyebrows, between his eyebrows. And Brahma had 5 heads before. And once, because one of his heads was discussing Prajalpa, Lord Shiva cut off one of his heads with that bow. Therefore, he's called Pitrihatyara, Pitrihantri, the killer of his father, for having chopped off one of his head. And Parshuram, under the order of his mother, father Jamadagni, had killed his mother Renuka using that bow. And now that bow was there. Lord Ram, he went there. He picked that bow up, strung that bow up. Not only strung that bow, he destroyed that bow. Why? He destroyed that bow because he did not want that destructive energy to continue. It's a contaminated bow with destructive energy and it'll destroy, only destroy. Should be finished off. And therefore, many times, there is a lot of destructive energy that comes within us. And we have to deal with that destructive energy, which comes because of envy, you know. And that envy is directed towards devotees. Just like Lord Ram strung the bow and diffused the bow's energy by breaking like you diffuse a bomb. Similarly, when we take shelter of the holy names of Krishna, that holy name of Krishna, Ram, Krishna, enters in our heart and diffuses that destructive energy off. Therefore, we chant the holy name. We chant the holy name because the destructive energy which is there within us from lifetimes, based on the very, very powerful anartha of envy, needs to be diffused and taken care of. The bow was broken. Sita and Ram were now to be married. Mother Sita and Ram married. Of course, there's too many details to it which I'm not covering. It's for paucity of time. This only Sita Kalyan is 4 hours talk actually. If you just discuss from Valmiki Ramayana, the marriage of Sita and Ram is a 4 hours discussion. Right? Sita and Ram were married. And if we carefully observe and see, Sita and Ram, wherever there was Sita, the divine mother, the mother of love, no demons were killed. Karan Dushan, 14,000 Rakshasa and Karan Dushan were killed because Sita was hidden in a cave. All the demons, Tataka, Subahu, were killed because Sita was not there. Whenever Sita was there by the side of Ram, no demon was killed by Ram. We see Shurpanaka, not killed, simply cut the nose, ENT surgeon. Lakshmana, simply cut the nose and ears off. You know, Trijata, not killed. Kakasura, this crow, Jayant, who had eyed Sita wrongly, had tried to do wrong things with Sita in the presence of Ram. But when Sita was there, mercy department, love department, no demon in the whole Ramayana killed in the presence of Sita, spared. Therefore, Ram is law, Sita is love. And when law and love come together, there is hope. If there's only law, there is trouble. If there's only love, there's too much leniency. When there is law and love coming together, there is great hope. And that law and love, Krishna and Srimati Radharani, Sita Ram, come together as Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Krishna comes to this world. Why? Because of his love affair with Srimati Radharani, his devotee. To understand what is the nature of her love, he comes. And it's not a love affair between the two of them. That love affair between Krishna and Sri Radha is the cause of benevolence to the world. Because he comes as Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And as Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, this royal wedding is the hope for all of us. Yadi gaur na hoito, tabe ki hoito, kemone dharitam de, radhar mahima, prema rasa sima, jagate jana toke. Yadi gaur na hoito, tabe ki hoito, if gaur, Lord Chaitanya wouldn't have come, kemone dharitam de, how would we have maintained life today? Radhar mahima, prema rasa sima, jagate jana toke. How would the world know the glories of the devotion that Srimati Radharani had for Krishna? How would we have the holy name? And what kind of holy name? No qualification. The holy name, the mercy that Lord Chaitanya is giving, is like the milk of a tigress. The milk of a tigress is very powerful in healing the most difficult diseases to heal. Firstly, who would go and milk the tigress? You know. But in order to get that milk, the receptacle that is needed to hold the milk must be of that quality. So powerful that milk, even pots made of gold melt away. Melt away by the power of that milk. And therefore the receptacle to hold that grace, that milk, has to be very qualified. So in our case, the mercy of Lord Gauranga is like the tigress's milk. And our heart doesn't have the quality to hold that milk. What is the benevolence of Lord Chaitanya? Not only does he give us that grace, that mercy, that milk, but he also gives us the quality of the receptacle. Take it. Benevolence. Patra, apatra, na dekhi sthana sthan. Doesn't see who is qualified, who is unqualified, doesn't see what place it is. Just benevolent. And where did it all come about from? From the love affair between Radha and Krishna, where Krishna thinks, what is it in Srimati Radharani? And what is it in me that attracts her so much? What is the nature of her love? The love affair between Krishna and Srila Prabhupada. What a benevolent love affair. That little child Abhay having a Rathayatra. His love between him. That's a love between him and Krishna, Jagannath. But that becomes a benevolent love affair for the whole world. Because Rathayatra comes to the whole world. Jagannath crosses the border and doesn't simply remain Odiyanath, becomes Jagannath. Literally. The world, the Lord of the universe. It was an affair between Abhay and Jagannath. No, it's not an affair between just a devotee and Krishna. It's a benevolent love affair that benedicts all souls, even England, London, where it says, ISKCON Rath Yatra, you know, puts Nelson Column at Trafalgar Square to shame. And what, so much so, that benevolent love affair forms a new word in the Oxford Dictionary. Juggernaut. It's an official word now. Something very huge, something very powerful, something very inspiring is called juggernaut. And if you go to the dictionary in the web and say juggernaut, it'll say also see Jagannath, it'll say. You know, it's a benevolent love affair of the Lord. It was just an affair between his small deities, which his father had given him as playtime, and between the Radha Govind deities in Calcutta, Abhay and him, Abhay and the Lord. That love affair became a benevolent love affair. So many temples over the world. So many deities all over the world. So all of us can have Radha Gokulananda now. Why? Because of the love between Prabhupada and his Radha Govind deities in his childhood. And therefore, this is a very, very powerful principle. That the love between Krishna and his devotee is not a selfish love affair. That love affair blesses the world. Thanks to Srila Prabhupada. That he loved Krishna. We are benefiting because of his love for Krishna. Thanks to Madhavendra Puri because he loved Krishna. Tomar Premavashe Kori Seva Angikar Darshan Diya Nistariba Sakala Sansar. The whole world is benefited by the darshan of Gopalji, Srinathji in Nathadwar today. And therefore, if we really want to serve and benefit others, we should cultivate our love for Krishna. We should start our love affair with Krishna. Krishna consciousness is about loving Krishna. And as we start that affair with Krishna, based on the auspicious guidance of our spiritual masters, the more we start cultivating our love for Krishna, that love will not just benefit us. That love will not just benefit our family. That love will not just benefit our country. That love will benefit all living beings in this world because it will be a benevolent love affair. So the third lesson we are learning is the royal wedding between the Lord and his consort. Is a benevolent wedding which gives blessing to the whole world. And we'll continue our discussion tomorrow morning where we will hear in that dream what does the Lord tell him and what is the reaction of Madhavendra Puri. How Madhavendra Puri reacts is incredible for a practitioner devotee. And please stay in touch, be tuned tomorrow morning again at 7:30 a.m. We'll continue our discussion on lessons from the life of Shripad Madhavendra Puri. I wish to thank you all very much for being here this morning. Hare Krishna.